You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the equine network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Danielle Amott from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Meg Moxick from Southern Illinois. And you're listening to The Mustang Journey, the official podcast of Mustang Heritage Foundation. This episode is part of the Horses in the Morning for July 2026. This episode is brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and Hispania Silk. Good morning, Horse World.
Hi, Horse World. We are so excited to be here, and the Mustang Heritage Foundation is back. We didn't really go anywhere, but we're back with a makeover, and we are going to have a special episode the fourth Thursday of every month on Horses in the Morning. Coming up on today's show, we have two special guests. One is Nate Eicher, who's coming to us from Texas, and he's going to talk about Mustangs and his career and how they have brought him along. And then we also are going to be talking to Ann Hanlon of the Maryland Mustang Mission and her journey with Woodrow. So, Meg, I know you joined Mustang Heritage Foundation recently, and I've only been with the foundation for 2 years now.
Yeah, I'm excited to be a part of the team at the foundation. And, you know, Mustangs are near and dear to both of our hearts. And I think having the opportunity with the foundation moving forward, you know, we have kind of done a makeover with the direction that we are able to go.
I mean, the foundation has been around, what, 25 years? We're coming up on our 25-year anniversary.
Yeah.
And so there's this huge legacy of, you know, the Mustang makeovers, the extreme Mustang makeovers, and, you know, getting people interested in adoption and all of that, like, flashy, you know, hey, did you guys know about these horses sitting in pens out west?
Right.
And, you know, all of that legacy was brought up for 25 years. And I feel like it did so much good. And then it stalled out, right?
Yeah.
So then at that point, when the TIP program ended, it was it 2023 ended?
Yeah.
That was right before I joined. Well, I joined the next year, right?
Yeah.
So what's funny is I was teaching online classes for an equine program, and I had students who were either Mustang trainers, or I even actually had students who worked at the BLM and they were finishing their degree, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And when the TIP program shut down, I started getting papers written by my students about the impact that was going to have on the Mustangs and the industry and all that. And that kind of piqued my interest, and I was going, hey, wait, what's going on? So that's how I learned about all that happening.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I had gotten my own Mustang and, you know, just kind of dove in head first, but then it was like, okay, well, now what?
Right.
With the foundation, now what is next? Everyone was going, what is going to happen next? What are they going to do?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm going to say I was a TIP trainer. I started in 2021. And then in 23, when the program ceased, I too was in that same boat wondering, okay, how do I pivot? How do I keep moving forward with this, you know, amazing passion that I have for these horses? And so being able to, you know, a couple years later here, three, I guess, being able to join the foundation, because education and opportunity, like you said, everybody's like, okay, what's next? What do we do with these horses? Yeah. And it's just like any other breed, except there's not, you know, we have quarter horse shows and we have eventing shows and all these things, but the Mustangs, you know, no one has given them the opportunity or the chance, or even just going to a specific Mustang show. Like you know, like Anne is going to be holding in August, where it's, you know, it's apples to apples. It's not apples to oranges. You know, we're not, but these horses can compete with the domestic horses, but we need to change that mindset and show people that they can. So, you know, creating these opportunities is important.
That's where we saw, I mean, when I got my Mustang, I went, okay, what do I join? Where do I go? How do I like get into this community?
Right.
And I couldn't find it. So I was like, you know what? Like, that's when I joined the foundation. I was like, I'm going to build it. Let's go.
Exactly.
Build it.
Exactly. Yeah. Build it and they will come. Yeah. We have to make it. We have to create this because they're clamoring for it. The folks that are out in the Mustang world and
People who have the Mustangs. Yeah,
exactly. So, and people every day I get emails like people wanting to know what's the process. How can I get one of these horses? Where can I get one of these horses at? Mm-hmm. And you know, they're becoming quite the commodity here in the East and I love it.
Same. Absolutely. No, yeah. I'm super excited. Every time I see more people get into Mustangs, I'm like, yes, you know, you won't go back now after you have one.
Yeah, no. I always say welcome to the club and no, you will be back. You think you're just getting one. No, just welcome.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we're going to have this podcast now to bring on some of those trainers and members and Mustang people, you know, who are out there.
Yeah, some of the influential folks in the community, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, it's going to be good. We're going to, you know, hopefully bring some education along with some opportunity for folks to, you know, and if hopefully we'll get some listener feedback too. It'd be fun to answer some questions along the way.
Absolutely. So. Yep. Because that's what people want is a place to come together to ask the right questions. I mean, you can go to a domestic horse trainer and ask them and they may be able to give you good advice, but Mustangs are different. We all know that. When I got mine, I went, oh, who am I going to ask? Where do I go? I want the right kind of help that will support my Mustang. And it was hard. It was hard as a new Mustang person. It was really hard coming in and I really wanted to do it, but I needed the support and everybody needs the support, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I think it's kind of hard to find, but creating a space where people can come, one, right? It's accessible, but two, that creating an environment that they feel comfortable. No, there's no stupid question. We want you to come. It takes a community to be able to train these horses, you know, and get them trained properly. It's not that they're, you know, harder or anything like that, but there's just a different skill set that you need. And it can be learned if you're willing to put in the time and effort. The USDA Forest Service manages around 7,100 wild horses and 900 wild burros, spanning approximately 2.5 million acres of the National Forest System lands. U.S. Forest Service Wild Horse Territories, WHTs, are located within 19 national forests across 9 states. To discover wild horses and burros available for adoption through the U.S. Forest Service, visit Double Devil Wild Horse Corrals on Facebook. We have Nate Eicher joining us for a quick interview. Nate, you are out in Central Texas in Mineral Wells. So tell us a little bit about your career and, you know, what part has the Mustangs played? How did they come into the picture?
Well, the Mustangs really played a big role in my career. Back in 2013, I did my first one. Before then, I had worked for someone for 6 years and gone out on my own training horses. So I was doing it on my own for a good while. But then in 2013, one of my clients was like, hey, you should try this. And at the time, we were in Pennsylvania. And so my first one was in New Jersey. And I won the first one and I was hooked. And so the next 10 years... Yeah, sorry. It really does. So the next 10 years, I pretty much did a bunch of Mustang makeovers. And with it being out in the public so much, it played a big part in bringing horses in for training and bringing new clients. You know, just built a lot of relationships through the Mustang.
That's fantastic. Yeah, they really do have a way of... you know, drawing you in once you do your first one. We always just say, well, you'll be back. Welcome to the family.
It's hard, you know, after you spend so much time with, you know, 4 months leading up to a makeover, you know, you build that relationship, you spend all that time getting them ready. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to see them go oftentimes after you compete, but yeah, it's an amazing It's an amazing deal.
Yeah. Do you find that you become more connected to the Mustangs that you're training than the domestic horses? Like, do they hook on a little different?
Yes, I would say so. Because they, and I think the reason is they haven't had a human in their life before. I mean, they might have seen humans and in the holding pens and all that, but they hadn't built a relationship. Nobody's built a relationship with them. And so it's a different deal because they're looking, or they get that connection if you work with them on it. Whereas like a quarter horse, they've seen people all their life. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's, I think because of that difference, they become more loyal if you treat them right. And they're like, they start to really enjoy life because they're getting a lot more than they got out in the wild. You know, they start to live in comfort here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. What is one Mustang that has stuck out to you over the years that you really, you know, bonded with?
Well, there's a couple. The first one was a horse named Cadillac. I had him in 2015, and he was a special horse. I taught him how to pull the buggy. I taught him how to ride bridleless, but he was athletic and he could change leads. You know, that's hard for a horse to do at 3-4 mm-hmm. months, but I taught him how to change leads on cue, and he was really special, and I knew it. And so when, at the time, we were in Pennsylvania, and we hauled all the way to Texas to show him at that makeover, and me and another guy were leading it in the compulsories. We were neck to neck, and then in the finals, the compulsory was in the morning, and I messed up my pattern by a little bit, and it put me pretty much at the bottom. But the freestyle that night, it was, you know, I was really bummed about where I was at in the placings because I knew I had the horse. He was so special and he was so connected. So I decided, you know, at the freestyle, I'm just going to do my best and just show him for what he is. And in the freestyle, I came in pulling the buggy. I had it set up like an Amish freestyle because that's my background. My parents were Amish.
Okay.
And I came in and unhooked the buggy, and then I took the bridle off. And when I did the bridleless pattern, you know, I did like some circling, some lead changes, some stops and spins, all bridleless. And I've done that before, but with him, he was so connected, even with all the noise in there, he was the most connected horse I ever had bridleless. Like, it was the coolest feeling in the world. And it was the first time I got a standing ovation was with him. Yeah, he was definitely a horse that stands out in my career.
That's fantastic. Well, that gives me goosebumps. That's awesome. When you come across one, that's a, you know, once in a lifetime kind of horse for sure. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the freestyles though. So I've seen a few of yours, been to Magic a couple of times, and I've always been impressed with, you know, you don't go crazy and get like all like fill the arena with props, but your props are always incredibly impressive. What is your inspiration and how do you come up with, you know, what you're going to do out there?
That's a good question. I'm not sure, to be honest with you, other than I have a pretty creative mind.
Okay.
And I guess it comes from that. I just learned how to be creative when I was young. And so when I started doing freestyles, I just, well, first of all, like I used to watch Bobby Kerr and his freestyles, and that was definitely an inspiration to me on how he did them and how packed he had them with action. And so I studied what he did and kind of his timing and what was important, what wasn't. And I became a friend of his then, and he was such a great guy. But so I paired that with my creativity and tried to match it with the horse I had at the time and try to put all of it together in, you know, whatever form or fashion I could. And I try not to copy anything that was done before. Mm-hmm. And so that's always hard, right? Because you,
yeah, right.
There's so many freestyles that have been done. And yeah. My main goal was to be authentic and, you know, do something that hasn't been done before, or at least not quite like it's been done before.
No, I think that's fair. Well, you've done a great job at that. One of my favorites that I saw you do was with your motorcycle. That was awesome.
Oh, thank you. That was a lot of fun.
Oh my gosh, that was impressive. But still, also your cabin. So are you pretty crafty, you know, like able to build and, you know, make your own props? Like, I think that's a definite skill set to have to go along in part with that.
Yes, I am. I actually did, when I first started training horses, I was 15. And well, actually, I started with cleaning stalls and doing barn work and ranch work at the place I was at. And then I started training a little bit. And, you know, when you're that young, you're like, man, there's something else out there. And my friends were doing construction. So I decided, like a year and a half into it, I'm going to try construction and have that kind of hours and get paid good and everything. And so I did that for a year and a half, and I learned all those skills. So it was great. But after a year and a half of it, I was like, I really love training horses. So right. I went back to that and haven't left since.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
But it was great to have that, to learn how to, you know, work around the house, remodel the houses I own, and build freestyles and you know, props for my freestyles and all that as well.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fantastic skill, because as a competitor as well, I'm limited because I'm not super crafty and don't possess those carpentry skills. So I think you definitely have a one up on those of us that can't.
Got to hire someone to do it.
Exactly. That's exactly it. So we have the freestyle, you know, the virtual competition going on right now, and then, you know, the finalists will go on to our show in October. If there was one piece of advice that you would give those that are participating in that, what would that be?
Well, I don't know that I just have one piece, but if I can give a few, like,
absolutely.
You don't need, like you mentioned before, like you don't need a huge amount of props. But if you can have a theme that's original with a song or a movie, you know, somewhere where that theme comes in, or maybe your background that people can relate to, and just be authentic with what you're doing and the props match what you're doing. So mm-hmm. I always think of it like if the judge or the audience is watching, they know from the moment you come out what that theme is. If there's a lot of questions, like, I'm not sure what that is or what it's about, it's going to definitely hurt your score.
Fair enough. No, that's
I mean, it can still work out. It can still work out good if everything goes really well. Mm-hmm. But if you have a theme where it's like, oh, I can relate to that, or I know exactly where that's coming from. Mm-hmm. And then, if the other thing I see a lot of, people don't practice their freestyles very much at all, and so they get a little lost or things get rushed a lot.
Okay.
So it's like, if you practice the freestyle and practice the timing of it, because that 3.5 minutes, if that's still what it is, that goes really fast.
Yes, it does.
So
out there it flies by. Mm-hmm. But no, that's a grand little set of thoughts there. I appreciate that. But especially, you're right, the audience being able to connect with what the, you know, rider is trying to present to them. I think that that makes a big difference. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I've got one last question for you. So why do you continue to stick with Mustangs after all this time? What is the one thing that makes you keep coming back?
Well, Mustangs are just unique. I mean, you can get a quarter horse all day long, and I love quarter horses. But if you want like a loyal partner, and if you want a challenge, like what I liked about the Mustangs is I'm starting on a clean slate, and I get to build this horse. I can't just, you know, build it like any other horse. I have to earn his or her trust. I have to build that credibility with that horse. And then I can shape that horse however I want. It's a clean slate. And so to me, it was always like, hey, this is a really cool challenge because it's hard.
Yeah.
But horses are so adaptable. And if we treat them right and just be patient and, you know, not try to cut corners, they're going to give you a lot. And some are going to give you more than others. But, you know, Mustangs, for the most part, have given me a lot. And there's been a couple special ones that have given me more. But it's always been so rewarding.
Yeah, no, that's very fair.
It's very rewarding. I'd say that's the biggest part of it.
Fair enough. I would agree with you. You know, it's something wild that hasn't needed you all these years to survive, so to speak, you know, and for them to choose you, I think it's life-changing to have that connection with.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no. Well, you said a couple things that triggered one more question of curiosity, if you're willing to answer.
Absolutely.
You said that you have, you know, an Amish background. So did you grow up with horses and, you know, was that something that was near and dear to your family? Or was it something that, you know, was just kind of in passing and you picked it up on your own?
Well, my parents both loved horses. Mm-hmm. Now, to the Amish, they were more like tools to them. Mm-hmm. But my dad especially loved horses. He loved riding them. And so it seemed like we always had one or two around. We had some ponies growing up and that kind of thing. So I'd say the love of horses comes from my dad. I'd say both my parents.
Okay.
But yeah. And then it's interesting, though. Like, I have 5 siblings, and none of them are in the horses.
Really? Wow. Yeah, no, I forget who it was, but somebody had commented at one point that, you know, you either have the horse bug or you don't. And, right. You know, it's just there's 2 types of people in the world, the horse people and the non-horse people.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I too grew up like that. And I think that it's special, you know, when you, from a young age, you're just smitten with them, so to speak. And it just sticks with you. It just makes a difference in the way, you know, that you train and the way you see them.
For sure.
To wrap things up, those that are new coming into the Mustang world, what would you say to them? What would you encourage them with? As a ending note?
Well, I would say get all the help you can. Yes, you can do it on your own. You can watch a lot of videos. But if you can be coached by a person or 2 or 3, be great. If you can go apprentice with some people, that'd be great. Because there's so much to learn that it's hard to try to learn it yourself and do it well.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
But don't be afraid to make the mistakes and just keep pushing on.
Exactly. Yeah, no, they are forgiving. And, you know, you could try again with them. It's not like it's a one and done.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I have found people are worried with that. I'm like, no, it's okay. It's just like kids, you know, as a parent, like you mess up sometimes, you can go back and correct the mistake and move forward. So
absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no. Well, Nate, we thank you so much for your time. And we're looking forward to seeing you in October as one of our judges. We thank you for coming all this way north.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
España Silk's grooming line utilizes silk proteins in each product. They are environmentally conscious, having selected from the finest mix of natural, organic, and cosmetically engineered ingredients. All España Silk's natural ingredients are derived from sustainable plant and mineral resources. We utilize many plant-based conditioners and proven moisturizers to work together with amino-modified organosilicone technology. Buy them at EspanyaProducts.com or your local retailer. All right. We are so excited to have a guest, our next guest, Ann Hanlon, joining us from Maryland. She runs the Maryland Mustang Mission. How did you get started in Mustangs? Like, who was your first Mustang? What drew you to Mustangs at all in the beginning?
Yeah. So I had lost my hard horse of 20 years back in February 2018. I always get a little mixed up on the dates. And actually, it was the very end of January 2018. And a friend of mine locally has Mustangs, and she was like, oh, you need one. And I was looking for another. He was a Checo, was a brown and white paint, quarter horse, warm blood cross. And I was looking for another horse of color. But as a stay at home with a young son, I couldn't afford much. Well, actually, two young kids at that time. I couldn't afford much. So, and I ride English. So a lot of them were Western, or they were expensive imports. And a friend of mine sent me the link to the BLM online auction, and it's kind of been history ever since. So yeah, I jumped on there, not having like literally 100% clueless. You know, I saw all the Hollywood with the Mustangs. I didn't really realize that they were still wild because I'm so far on the East Coast. It's not something that we get to experience. And yeah, I jumped on, like, honestly thought I was going to get this horse off the trailer and take it down and put it in the paddock. So I learned a lot from February to April after I won Woodruff's bid in February.
Yeah.
And, you know, picked him up at Dream Park on April 13th, 2018 in New Jersey. So yeah, I was bidding with a broken heart, but I can tell you right now, after watching some of the online auctions, I wouldn't be able to afford him this day and age. But yeah, he's done more for me than I honestly can ever put into words.
Yeah, because some of the, well, you're talking about the auction, some of those really colorful horses that stand out on the auction end up getting bid up, right? Like, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I paid $3,950 for him 8 years ago, which was way more than I wanted to spend. I called my mom crying. Simply because I didn't realize he was so popular. He was followed by photographers for 3 years in the wild. They named him Woodrow. They named his whole herd or band after the Lonesome Dove. And he was photographed for close to 3 years. So I just saw a picture of him on Facebook. I saw a picture of him on the BLM internet auction. And I was so new and so ignorant to all of it that I was clueless. I was like, oh, $125, sign me up. I have about $2,000 to spend. I'll be good to go. And yeah, I won two bids on him in the very beginning, like the first day I was approved, just to test it out. Yeah. And then I did what you always do, and you wait until the very end. And every single bid I put in on that horse, I was outbid. And I was literally crying in my kitchen with my mother-in-law. Because it's a week long of like amazing pain just waiting for it to end. And
right.
I put in a $4,000 bid and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to pay for this horse, but here we go. And, you know, by the grace of God, I refreshed my computer screen and it said, you're the highest bidder. And I literally just started sobbing. I was like, wait, I just lost him and now I won him. What's happening? So, yeah, it makes for a great story now. I was not laughing about it then, but it's pretty cool. And again, I started my Facebook page. It was originally called Woodrow the Mustang because so many people wanted to follow him. And I was so new to all of it that it was really cool. I actually almost canceled Facebook right before I got it. And then so many people wanted to follow him from all over that I thought, okay, fine, I'll do this. And he has over 9,000 followers now, and it has nothing to do with me, but you know, it's just, it's cool. The journey that we've been on, and I don't have any regrets documenting Woodrow's journey, just because, you know, I'll never forget the first touch. And unfortunately they cut his tag off because I asked him to, because I didn't know it was such a big milestone in the Mustang world. Right. Mm. So, you know, like I'll never forget those moments, but they kind of fade, you know, we're 8 years in now. And if you looked at him, you'd never know that he was a wild Mustang. He looks like just a regular domestic horse. I'm quite the diva. So, you know, it's just, it's nice to kind of have those videos. And I look back at all my posts and I'm like, oh, good grief. I've really grown in my gentling journey as well. You know, some of the things I did with him, I was like, oh gosh, I would have gotten killed with, you know, whatever, another horse. So,
right.
He was very kind to me for my first Mustang, especially because he was a stallion for 7 to 8 years out in Wyoming. And I had more people tell me not to do this, which is what pushed me to do it. So, you know, I don't have any regrets for any of that now.
No. Oh, that's amazing. What a wonderful story. So how was it? You said you had 2 kids at the time when you got Woodrow?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me about like mothering while also being a trainer, venturing into this new world of Mustangs.
Yeah. So actually Meg will tell you, I don't necessarily even consider myself a trainer now. It's a little bit of a, you know, a thing with me because I never saw myself being a horse trainer. I was a ICU nurse and took care of my dad while he passed away. My oldest son was turning 1 year old. So I quit nursing and decided to stay at home to take care of my dad and to raise my son. And then we were blessed with my youngest, Walter, and he was, gosh, they were both pretty young when I got Woodrow, maybe 2 and then, or 2.5 and then 1 year. Walter turned 1 year right after I got Woodrow. So, you know, it's definitely a struggle. I would say, honestly, surprisingly, it was slightly easier then because I could lay Walter down for a nap. I could work with Woodrow. Will, my oldest, would play on the playground, or he would sit next to the pen and watch me. And it's fascinating because he's the one that's taken to the horses more so now. So it was slightly easier then, whereas now I'm literally just an unpaid Uber driver for baseball. I just drive to the baseball field. I sit at the baseball field for hours and then I drive home. So quite honestly, it was easier when I got Woodrow. But, you know, motherhood adds a whole new aspect. And I don't care if you're working with Mustangs, if you're working with off the track thoroughbreds, warm bloods, you know, if you do dressage, jumping, reining, whatever you do with horses, motherhood changes that. And I think, you know, you add a whole new level of not necessarily fear, but you're protecting yourself in a way because you have this responsibility. And, you know, I've definitely noticed that way more with the Mustangs when I'm in the pen, and I might call it quote unquote quits a lot sooner than I would have before because of my kids.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So now out of all of the Mustangs that you've worked with, I'm going to say, do any other favorites stick out? Obviously Woodrow's like the rock star, but do you have any other favorites that have stood out?
None of them can top him. So I feel sorry for him. I they all teach you something and they all hold a special place in your heart, even the ones that don't necessarily work out. But yeah, there are definitely a couple. I had a really awesome gelding that I took to the Pennsylvania Tip Challenge and won. And his name, I named him Curious George because he was just so curious about everything. And one of my good friends owns him, so it's fun to be able to keep up with him. And then I had a really, really, really quirky horse that I love and hate all at the same time that my dear friend Meg found for me in Ewing.
Just say that's my fault. Sorry.
And I took him to the Classic in Kentucky their first year, and we were 5th out of, I think it was like 59 horses or something. So as much as I love him and hate him all at the same time, he holds a very special place in my heart. he's been probably one of my hardest by far, still to this day. So, you know, it's, I think they've all, I have a really cool guy now. He's been a really slow go. He's 9 years old and his name's Tonka. And I have way less time now than I did when my kids were young. So, and then, you know, Woodrow was my one and only, right? Now I have, four in training. And then I have, four of my own, one of which I just sold. So, you know, you accumulate them because they're kind of like potato chips. Yeah. And then you just don't have as much time. And I feel that the ones that you're gentling kind of get the brunt of that, I would say, right? You as a trainer. Okay, so now I guess I could call myself a trainer, right? I have made a name for myself in the Mustang community. Three of the four horses that I have in training are Mustangs. So, you know, they come first and then my guys come second. But yeah, they're all pretty special. But Woodrow, I mean, he set that bar high right from the very start. And, you know, coming off of having a heart horse of almost 20 years that saw me through so many big, huge parts of my life, you never think you're going to have another one. And then and then Woodrow came in and was like, hold my beer. And here he is, a heart horse that's done way more than I could have ever imagined. So,
yeah. Well, so you mentioned that a lot of the Mustangs are kind of in the Western world. I resonate with that. So I grew up in the horse world and have been around the industry working. And I also was like, wait, there are Mustangs still? Long time ago. And then I dove in head first, right? So I want to ask you, since you're one of the, you know, quote unquote, English trainers doing, I guess, eventing and so on, do all of them end up being good jumpers, okay jumpers? What have you found with all the Mustangs you've trained?
Yeah, I honestly haven't met a Mustang yet that doesn't love to jump. A few take a little while to get it, you know, to the point where they're kind of putting it all together per se, but they really love it, which to me is a little bit surprising, honestly, because most of them don't look quote unquote English, right? Us in the English world are a little snooty. We like certain conformation and we like certain body parts to be, you know, we like them uphill, not croup high, nice, you know, their neck comes out of their shoulder nicely, tall. You know, all the little nitty gritty details, right? So, you know, for the Mustangs, you don't necessarily always get that, you know, it's quite a gamble. And I think the other part too is, you know, with the Mustangs, what you see in the pens is not what you're going to end up with. I think the glow up is probably one of my favorite parts and the most rewarding part of working with the Mustangs.
Yeah.
And so you kind of have to have an eye for it to see through that. Meg found Q. He was probably one of the ugliest horses I've ever laid my eyes on. I mean, big old honking head. Relatively croup high, low set tail, had a decent shoulder and neck, but good golly, was he just absolutely hideous. And on top of it, just a plain bay, right? It's not like I could be like, oh my gosh, his color's gorgeous. So now he's stunning. Like he's gorgeous. Really is stunning. I mean, he's grown into his head and, you know, he's just filled out so nicely. So, and that sucker is one of the most athletic horses I've ever ridden and can jump the moon. Just doesn't always have the best work ethic. So, you know, I would say that the Mustangs are just as competitive as any of the other breeds out there in the English world. It's just getting, you know, the mindset of Mustangs are mutts and blah, blah, blah out of people's heads. And another thing that I run into, especially here on the East Coast, I'm 5'9". So I'm tall and I have a very long leg and I went from having a 17 hand thoroughbred to having a 15 hand Mustang. It's a big difference, right?
Right.
And, you know, now my hard horse was only 15'2" and he was just as wide as he was tall. But, you know, you look at Woodrow, he's not built to do what I do with him. He's a little too drafty in my opinion. He's slightly croup high. You know, I'm really nitpicking him because honestly, he's perfect, but he's just as competitive with all the other horses out there. So I always say to people now that are looking at the Mustangs, you know, height is honestly just a number. I evented Woodrow's daughter, who's only 14 hands, up to beginner novice, and she could have gone farther with, you know, more petite rider. She didn't skip a beat. She was able to actually do the horse strides and some of the stuff in eventing. And the great thing about eventing is they don't care if you get down the line in 2 strides or you get down in the line in 12 strides. As long as you get down the line, it doesn't matter. And that's right. The nice thing about the eventing. And, you know, the dressage, they're pretty competitive in the dressage. But, yeah, Woodrow tripped and fell over a cross rail. And I thought, oh, heavens, he is not going to ever be able to event. And that horse can jump. I mean, he can absolutely jump the moon. And loves it. I mean, I won't embarrass Will on the podcast, but Will almost accidentally took him over a jump the other day because Woodrow was just like, this is what we're going to do. And Will was like, no. So he'll literally jump even if you're ready or not, or if you're pointing at it or not. So yeah, I think they really enjoy jumping.
That's awesome. I love hearing that. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit to the Maryland Mustang Mission. So why did you start it? And tell me when you started and why.
It's all Woodrow's fault, Danielle.
I know. He's right.
No, actually, I'm going to actually sort of blame it, quote unquote, on the Mustang Heritage Foundation. So I ran a tip challenge for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And my third year was my biggest and most successful. And 2 days after that, you guys said that you were no longer. Yeah. And I wasn't ready to walk away. So I thought, you know what? Now's the time. There were certain things that I loved about the tip challenges, and there were certain things that I wanted to do differently. And I thought, here's your chance. So that's when I started the Maryland Mustang Mission. And we've been in existence since January 24. Yes, because this will be our third year.
Yeah. And I think you guys were not alone in kind of picking up the tip challenges. I think when that program got shut down, a lot of different groups kind of ran with their own version of that for a little while. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I think what's happened a little bit in our area is a lot of people have done what I've done and they've adopted and they've done the tip challenges. And then they're like, oh, my gosh, this horse is so amazing. I can't get rid of it. I think doing it this way, the wild horse kind of the extravaganza or tip challenge side of things was kind of starting to die out. I had 2 entries last year on my closing date and literally was pulling teeth to get people to come and got up to 11. But, you know, it's just so expensive for prizes and ribbons and facility rental and, you know, just all the things that go into it that I was like, something needs to change. You know, the Mustangs have grown tremendously here on the East Coast. So to give them something that, you know, every trainer, I mean, you could be a kid doing lead line all the way up to a professional adult trying for the ultimate American, you know, Mustang division or title. It gives something for everybody, which I think is also really nice because that's not really something we have, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to ask you one final question, and that is if you were to give advice to someone who has never worked with Mustangs before and was going on that auction site like you did, what piece of advice would you offer that person?
You know, honestly, I would just say go with your gut. If you feel like this is what you're called to do, then I say go for it because it's a journey that, you know, I never, like I said, I needed one horse. I never thought I'd be where I am today. And, you know, all the glory goes to God and to Woodrow. I mean, you know, he's opened so many doors that I honestly didn't even know existed. If you had told me 8 years ago I'd be running a nonprofit, I would have told you you're absolutely out of your mind. I have no interest. if you had told me 8 years ago that I would run a Facebook page with over 9,000 people on it and people would literally see Woodrow and just only care about Woodrow, I'd be like, no, you know, probably get like 100 followers, you know, like, so it's just, it's such an incredible journey. It's such an amazing, you know, it's truly life-changing. And when you bond with a Mustang, it's like nothing you've ever experienced before. I had a bond with my older guy, Checo, after 20 years together. And just in the 8 years that I've had Woodrow, the bond that I have with him is just, you know, it's hard to even put into words, and I won't say too much more because then I'll start to cry. But yeah, it's amazing. It truly is a journey of a lifetime. So if anybody out there is listening and you have the opportunity, I say go for it. Absolutely go for it.
Go for it. I love that.
Maybe don't dive in head first like I did. Be a little bit more prepared, but definitely go for it.
Go for it with help. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Anne. It's been a delight to have you on, and we will be seeing you in the fall.
Yeah, super excited and very fortunate to be part of the qualifiers for the finals.
Wow, we had some really great guests on this first episode, didn't we, Meg?
Yeah, no, I enjoyed both the conversations.
Yeah. In fact, I really resonated with what Anne was saying, because honestly, it's the exact same thing we saw with the foundation that, you know, while the tip challenges were wonderful and really important in their own time, that the people who loved Mustangs had all their stalls full, so they didn't have room for another one.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think what we saw in the Mustang community, like on a broader scale, was that, you know, a lot of those people had Mustangs and were happy to get more, but they needed somewhere to sell them after, right? After the training was done. Mm-hmm, and and of course they kept their favorites along the way. That's like a given.
That's a given. That's a given. We've all failed at some point there.
Yeah, absolutely.
One's staying.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. This one's staying. This one's mine now. Yeah.
Exactly.
We're also broadening our reach to really offer those opportunities to Mustang owners, because we want people to be interested in either buying a trained Mustang or adopting one themselves, right? Either way.
Right. Well, I think that, again, just like anything else, you know, you have your quarter horse community, you have your thoroughbred community, you have your gated horse community. And I think giving the Mustangs the opportunity to have their own niche community as well, where people can come and they belong. And it's such a overwhelmingly accepting community, right? That is the thing I have found myself, and I've heard and people have told me directly countless times, is how welcoming folks are. And I think being able to connect the dots, you know, not just locally, but across nationally is important, because these horses have something really special to offer. And you know, they just need the opportunity. And so we're creating those opportunities. I'm so excited.
I know. The fall's going to be fun. It's gonna be fantastic. Mustang and Burrow finals, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I'm super excited. It's going to be grand. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, also today I enjoyed speaking with Nate about the freestyles. I will tell you that is, you know, I've done, this will be my fifth makeover, I think, coming up January. And freestyle is my least favorite
part of the whole thing.
It's no, because I know it. I love watching it. I don't like performing it. Like, because I, as much as I am a creative soul, I lack the ability that, like, Nate, I was, you know, he can build his own props. I'm not good with a song.
His freestyles are incredible.
I know. But I think the thing that stuck with me most, you know, because, and I know I'm bad about it, because it's like, I don't really want to, because, you know, I'm not going to top 10 it. I don't really need to practice, kind of thing. But I see it a lot, and I haven't top 10 it. So there you go, yet. But, you know, people, they don't practice enough, you know, or you're kind of like, I mean, if I make it, then I see people cramming last minute, like while we're at the show, like, okay, we got to go to Lowe's. We got to get props and practice it. And, you know, it's good training for your horse. It really is, you know, whether you make the top 10 or not to do the freestyle.
It's really good training. Yeah. And you might as well. Yeah, you're right. You can totally tell the people who threw it together at the event.
Yeah.
And like, kudos, but also maybe have one prepared. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, no, I think that it goes a long way to practice the timing with your horse and make sure that they are comfortable with whatever props you are bringing, and make sure that it's feasible to get it in and out of there, because that 3 minutes goes by really quick. I will say that much.
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, so, and you want to go in like feeling confident, right? And obviously you want your horse to feel confident. You want them to know what's coming And yeah. You can see it, like, and the judges can see it if they go in there and they're like, wait, what are we doing? What's going mm-hmm. on? Mm-hmm. What's that yeah. prop?
Yeah.
I've never seen that before.
Exactly. Yeah. No. And I know when I was practicing with my horse for 2024 for the Fort Worth Mustang Show, you know, my theme was Rapunzel. And, you know, in the anticipation of it. So riding with a dress on. Oh, mm-hmm. that's a whole different feat
uh-huh,
than trying to ride in boots and jeans. So, you know, you should definitely uh-huh. make the effort to practice ahead of time.
I think most things that you see in a Mustang freestyle are not going to be normal things you train a horse to do. Like,
no. Yeah. So, but
jumping over tarps and, mm-hmm. and wearing mm-hmm. costumes and can't even think of the crazy things we've seen, that horses pushing giant inflatable balls of whatever down,
yes, jumping down into the backs of trucks, mm-hmm.
jumping over moving jumps. I saw that one at the classic. Yeah. Oh, that was incredible. I went, that jump is like actively moving. It's and the uh-huh. horse just okay, no just, problem.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll mm-hmm. jump it.
Yeah, no, they are incredibly fun to watch, especially, you know, when you've put in the time and they're executed mm-hmm. well because of the hours of practice. Why it's very impressive. And I've not seen anyone else, you know, do that. I know the thoroughbreds do it now, but it's very unique and original. We are the mm-hmm. OG in the freestyle world. And so I think it's, you know, it's definitely a heritage that's worth hanging on to. So.
Absolutely. And we will. We're going to have freestyles at the finals.
Yeah.
It starts out with the virtual freestyle challenge that's open this summer mm-hmm. and open right now.
Get your entries in. When does it close?
It closes August 1st, which is very soon after this podcast comes out. But the exciting thing about it that we'll be able to announce or have announced already is that anyone who goes to the finals freestyle mm-hmm. will be kind of on the slate and be auditioning for, if you will, mm-hmm. the Mustang Heritage Invitational, the Mustang Heritage Invitational at Road to the Horse 2027.
Yes, that is so exciting.
Dun, dun, dun.
I know. To be on that kind of a stage in front of all those horse people, like, y'all, come on, get your freestyles together. That incentivizes me that if I could participate, I might would.
yep. Practice.
Because it could
be the break of your career.
I was gonna say, it could pay off big.
Uh-huh. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. No, it's an incredible opportunity. So yeah, I'm excited to see what people come up with.
Mm-hmm. They are my favorite class to watch, obviously. It's so fun. I mean, I came from like, you know, the boring sport horse world where everything is very scripted and it's on a course and whatever. I guess mm-hmm. that's not too boring. But then I saw freestyles and I went, wait, this is competition.
Right. Yeah. This is next level.
Art competition.
No.
Super fun.
It's art, music, and horses and humans all wrapped up into one.
You can find the Mustang Heritage Foundation at mustangheritagefoundation.org. We have a separate podcast feed in addition to Horses in the Morning. If you just want the Mustang shows, search for The Mustang Journey on your podcast player. Thanks to our sponsors, U.S. Forest Service, the Double Devil Wild Horse Corrals, and Espana Silk.
Find your herd with the Mustang Heritage Foundation.